thought what I would take as a point of entry into the discussion is to look at some of the recent history, primarily in the electoral arena in New York City, and using that as an example, showing some of the small victories and some of the setbacks that the idea of Latino-Black unity has seen, essentially since the mid-80s through now. And people will disagree that the electoral arena may or may not be where we should focus our energies and our ideas of unity, but nevertheless, it is where a lot of interaction, struggle, conflict, as well as unified action takes place. And it has been an important arena of political activism in New York City for both African Americans and Latinos. I think that to begin with, there are two polar or two ends of ways of thinking about how intergroup, especially among oppressed nationalities, how intergroup relations and dynamics occur in the political realm, in the political level. One is the idea that, well, every group has to carve out its own space and niche. We are racially or ethnically identified, and groups and people tend to unite around that identity, and that the history of American politics, American political action, is largely one of succession of racial ethnic groups organizing themselves, you know, whether they come in as immigrants or in the case of Black Americans as they emerge out of slavery, that self-organization is on the basis of ethnicity, race, and that a group does best when it basically looks out for its own interests and builds upon that loyalty to la raza, that loyalty to a notion of unity among that people. And that idea, let's call it basic ethnic politics, some may call it nationalism of some type, and we know that there are different types of nationalism. This idea of just straight ethnic politics is even, I think, a more basic strategy which crosses class bounds within each group. That's one strategy that I think is dangerous to the possibility of Black-Latino unity, and it's dangerous to the possibility of a broad coalition that crosses each racial group, and it can limit in many ways the possibilities for a real transformation of this society, which I take as the bottom line goal and objective that we need to be talking about. On the other pole is the idea which is very attractive and appealing, I think, to Latinos, especially among its more political and activist tradition, that we share a common oppression. And in the case of our relationship with African Americans, we share, even deeper than that, a cultural, historical tradition. In the case of Puerto Ricans, perhaps even more so, since we are a population highly concentrated in the Northeast, in precisely the same cities where blacks have been also concentrated. And so we have unlimited instances and experiences of sharing with blacks our evolution and development on the individual level and as a group level. And that because of that shared experience, that is the basis of mutual respect and the possibility for unity, so that we aren't talking about just Puerto Ricans go out for their own and the most important thing is to get a Puerto Rican elected and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think to contrast those two kinds of traditions that exist within the Puerto Rican community, and I think they exist in the other communities, other Latino communities, and among blacks. The problem, I think, is that the first focus on ethnic politics is really just a scramble for everybody getting their own piece of the pie. And although certain elements and stratas within each of the groups may benefit from that approach, the more politically sophisticated or the business entrepreneurial segments within each of those communities can benefit from a simple ethnic politics approach. And I think that an audience, a conference that is trying to dig into some of the significance of such a key figure such as Malcolm X wants to look past straight ethnic politics. That we're looking at the historic systemic oppression of people of color here in this country, and that we're not about every group going out all for itself. On the other hand, the ideal of a unity which appeals to really a humanist and a political ideal of uniting on the basis of oppression, on the basis of our common experience, on the basis of the fact that we are both groups that are just struggling to establish our existence and to sustain our peoples as a growing, living, dynamic entity within this country, that the possibility of uniting us because we have a common oppression is not enough. It's not enough because oftentimes that appeal is hard to translate into actual concrete programs of action. Within our respective communities, that kind of appeal tends to fall on deaf ears because of the fear and competition and racism that we have internally and toward each other, the ignorance and the total lack of history and knowledge that we are able to acquire, especially through the public school systems in which the great majority of our children attend. So that approach is has a positive basis, but it's difficult to translate that to specific action, to specific strategies. And we have seen, I think, where those attempts have fallen by the wayside because they don't come to grips with the real conflicts internally and across each of the groups. I think some of that shows up in the experience of the electoral politics since the mid-80s in New York City. I'll start with 1985, and it's always a great error to start any story in one of the middle chapters, but let's start there because it's what comes to mind, and that's where our memory is a little more refreshed. In 85, there was a very interesting conjuncture there, situation, when the total disgust with the Koch administration created the possibilities among blacks and Latinos for a citywide coalition to defeat Koch. And briefly, Basil Patterson was the ideal candidate posited by a coalition of the more traditional political sectors within the black and Latino community. I think that the name of the coalition at that time was the Coalition for Racial and Economic Justice. I don't know if that sounds, that's right. But it was a big point of unity among a certain established sectors within the African American community and also in the Puerto Rican community. There was conflicts within that coalition, and finally come to a head when Patterson decides he's not going to run, and the next apparent candidate was going to be Herman Badillo. At that time, the coalition fails to unite behind Badillo, and that is reflecting certain conflicts within the black political establishment itself also. And at risk of simplifying, you had the Manhattan black political leadership, what has now come to be called the Gang of Four of Percy Sutton, Basil Patterson, David Dinkins, one or two others, opposing the idea of Badillo as the candidate, and then folks like the names again escape me, the folks in Brooklyn, who some of the black political leadership in Brooklyn, Roger Green, I think, Alvin. Right. Which that grouping had said, no, let's go with Badillo because he's the only viable alternative. That didn't happen, and then you get Denny Farrell, who runs a very weak campaign against Koch, and so that coalition wasn't able to gel around a well-known figure who could have run a viable campaign against Koch. That situation from the Latino perspective was cause of a lot of conflict and resentment towards the black political establishment because they felt that Badillo was the best option at that point. And so there was, at that point, that was a setback. Now, again, at the beyond the level of what's going on at that, you know, the negotiations and the lobbying and so forth at the higher levels that go that take place among the established political leaders, one may say, well, that isn't really what was the pulse of the community and so forth. But the fact of the matter is that the failure to bring that unity about did create resentments, and it split among Puerto Rican activist types as well as those the more traditional political strata among the Puerto Rican community. It caused a split because the more traditionals said, well, you see, there's an example of why we can't trust the blacks. And then there was among the more radical Puerto Ricans saying, well, you know, we shouldn't be putting in our chips with Herman Badillo anyway. He's not the kind of leader that we want to have postulated as a candidate. What does he represent? And he's just a part of the establishment and so forth. So there were splits, Puerto Ricans vis-a-vis blacks, and splits among Puerto Ricans as well as the splits among blacks. And that's how it gets more and more complicated. What was significant in terms of the next phase of that process was Jesse Jackson's run for the Democratic primary, in the presidential primary, which is in 86. And there, an important development occurs in which the more radical Puerto Rican activists who did think that the electoral arena was an important strategy, argued among the Puerto Rican, within the Puerto Rican community, that, listen, we got to put that conflict around Herman Badillo and back in 85 to rest. What's important now is that we have a totally different situation with Jesse's national campaign. And this truly offers us a vehicle for organizing around the program, which is well beyond even what Basil Patterson or Herman Badillo might have put forth in terms of a national campaign. And so there we have the beginnings of a coming together among Puerto Rican activists who are committed to an electoral strategy that, yes, we could rebuild that unity and contribute toward a unity around Jesse Jackson's campaign. And that gave birth to various forms. There was an organization, Latinos for Jackson, and so forth, and an involvement in the Rainbow Coalition politics. That comes then to 1989, where essentially those same forces, and I think a little more expanded by then, decide to work for Dave Dinkins' campaign. And then you have the Latinos for Dinkins effort, which again sharpened the distinctions being made within the Puerto Rican community in particular around we can build a unity when the program of the campaign is something that goes beyond ethnic politics, something that is concrete around a specific agenda, and true, it isn't going to revolutionize the society, but this is an evolutionary process, and short of a total revolutionary process, this is one way to advance certain goals and objectives. And that idea had its appeal and galvanized certain sectors among Latino activists. And in the primary in which Dinkins defeats Koch, the Latino vote is very significant. At that time, it was something on the order of 55% went for Dinkins, 45 went for Koch, when you had just about every other group besides blacks overwhelmingly going for Koch. So in that sense, the Puerto Rican Latino vote was intermediate between that huge black base of support for Dinkins and then the white ethnics who went overwhelmingly for Koch, except for liberals and some labor sectors. And then, even more importantly, with the campaign against Giuliani, what I think is sometimes overlooked is the fact that many Puerto Ricans who had went with Koch, the majority of those who had went with Koch stayed with the Democratic Party and went with Dinkins in the finals, whereas every other group switched and they bolted the Democratic Party and went with Giuliani, which was another important shift there that contributes to the margin of Dinkins over Giuliani. All of this to say, and I'll come to close now, that when there is some possibility that a unity can be built which doesn't rely solely on an ideal of unity based on historical or cultural sense of unity that we share, and when that unity can focus on specific goals and objectives which are seen by Latinos and blacks as enhancing the political power, the empowerment, the capacity for political organization within these respective groups, then I think there will be even better basis for a unified political action. I take the example of electoral politics because I think it's one that is a large area in which hundreds of thousands of people get involved in. But there are other realms of struggle and other forms of struggle in which these kinds of unity can be built. But I think, again, we need to do it on the basis of specific concrete plans, goals and objectives, which truly enhance and empower our respective communities and even beyond, so that we're looking past our individual realities to some kind of long-term struggle in which we can change the whole basis of oppression and repression, which is what is holding us down in the first place.
Thank you.